This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways. And all the styles that show off the many sides of you. From daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between. Because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
The march to spring training and opening day is upon us. Rob Bradford from Baseballs and Boring here, and we'll have you covered every single day with podcasts that aim to educate, entertain, and inform you as a baseball fan. Follow Baseballs and Boring in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
97.1 FM Talk Podcast.
It is Second Amendment Radio and the Great Outdoors. I'm Mark Cox, along with our producer, Carl Middleman, and assistant producer, Bo Matthews. How are you, Bo?
Yeah, where's your pew-pew, Bo?
Yeah, where's my paycheck upgrade there, cowboy?
That's right.
I did five things this week, and I reported it.
I do this for love. I don't get paid for this.
Oh, my gosh. Love of country.
Love of country and job.
Love of the Constitution, everybody.
Yeah, no kidding. Boy, we've had what a great run of weather this week. Bo, you been outside enjoying that there in the thought tub?
Absolutely. Well, of course, every day, doesn't matter what the temperature is. But I'm going back and forth on, do I put grass seed out yet? Or are we going to have another, you know, freeze spell? I don't know. I've got to get with my people at Pasiglia and talk about it because I've got some patches I need to fill in. And so I'm just not a good landscape person. You know, I just am not.
Well, you know, I've said that myself over the years. And, you know, Hanson's Tree Service is one of the people that advertise on my show. And it's always great because they've got people out there who are like tree doctors. And whenever I've had a problem, I just call up my friend Chad and say, hey, can you send somebody over? I think I got a problem here. And these people can look at your yard or your more specifically your shrubs and your trees and kind of tell you what the fix is. That's always a good idea. I need help. I'm just not one of those project people.
Doctors with chainsaws. But
they are very much so.
There's actually where I got firewood last year was a company called Tree Surgeons, and they do what you're talking about, your company does. And you know what? I love knowledgeable people. To me, I have no idea. That's why I live in the woods, so there's not a lot of landscaping going on, if you know what I'm talking about. But I'm excited. This weather is just, it's feels so good to warm up finally.
Fantastic.
It's raining right now, though.
Well, I know, but we did have a good run for late February, early March. You can't beat that, and you know the other shoe's going to drop at some point. So I was out on a walk with the kids. I think it was on Wednesday of this week, and I looked at a neighbor's house, and there were already green shoots from their plants coming up out of the ground. So you know those are going to die as soon as it gets back down to in the 20s or teens. It's just a matter of time.
Well, hey, you know what? I got an email from a group called American Firearms Association I wanted to mention. It says it's official. Cash Patel is now the acting director of the ATF. I didn't know that. Did you know that?
I did. They announced that he was going to be the acting director of the ATF. I don't know if that's because they're going to take Congressman Eric Burleson's advice and try to dismantle the ATF, so there's no reason to put a full-time person in there, or because it falls under the auspices of Patel's duties anyway, he can just run the organization for the meantime until they get somebody that they're interested in. I mean, there's a lot of people that would like to see it go away.
And this group does. Absolutely
sure,
does.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, and you can ask, and we've had Burleson on my show talking about it. He thinks it's outmoded. He'd like to see some major changes. And let's face it, many times it's been used for political purposes to try to intimidate and or punish gun store operators, with the way that they punishing them for the way they handle paperwork, or and I don't support anybody breaking the law and violations, but you can also carry that too far, and they don't like small mom and pop shops, and you can go down the litany of complaints against the ATF for the way a lot of those things have been handled over the years.
Yeah, and like we had on this show months ago, the guy that was the he did gun shows. He had an ammo shop in, I think, Oklahoma, and he would do gun shows, and they came in and cleared out all the ones that he had, not his personal firearms, the ones he was selling for an investigation or whatever. Their point of view, and I'm not speaking for them, but in the email it says, if it can be done at USAID, it can be done at the ATF.
Yeah.
Sell the furniture, sell off their guns and their buildings. And, you know, open it up. And I mean, who doesn't? Well, that's a wild question.
I mean,
who doesn't enjoy seeing what Doge is doing?
They're not enforcing gun laws necessarily. They're enforcing regulations over gun stores. And that's not going to change. You're still going to do a federal background check. You're still going to do all those things. But, you know, like there need to be modifications to the NFA, in my opinion. When it comes to suppressors, and why in the world are we still making people jump through hoops to buy a suppressor for their firearm? That just absolutely makes no sense. It's driven the price of them through the roof. You have to pay the federal government $200 for the right to even apply for a suppressor, which is stupid because it's not like a spy movie where everybody wants one so they can go out and assassinate their neighbor. That's not what they're for. These days, you could argue, from the hearing aid industry is probably the one that supports the NFA because so many people have damaged their hearing over the years by firing their guns. I mean, honestly.
Right, right. You know, I thought the most damage to my ears was from wearing headphones in my career of radio like you. I mean, how many hours? What?
Exactly. Huh? You had them up too loudly.
No, of course, because I like good music, and so I would crank it. But, I mean, Mark, just think of the hours that you wear headphones in your job.
It's true.
But I will tell you that I bought some Apple AirPods, the Pro ones.
The Pro, ooh.
And I did a hearing test, and there was hardly any hearing loss. So I was actually happy. It could be also because I have a suppressor, and that helps.
Well, I mean, it doesn't hurt. I mean, not everybody's had them for as long as they've been shooting, though, and I think that's where the danger comes in. I had to go get a hearing test the other day. I was having trouble with my left ear. And
really?
Whenever you go in to get your ear looked at like that, they immediately want to give you a hearing test, right, to find out what's going on. And I don't know. I'm not second-guessing them, but maybe they make a lot of money selling hearing aids. They always want to do a hearing test. So they came back with mine, and they showed that in both ears, worse in the left than the right, I'm losing hearing at higher ranges.
That's why the kids... And at schools, they play things that only the kids can hear and the teachers can't hear it, and they laugh and they think that's really funny.
Well, I mean, I ask them, I'm like, so, like, just out of interest, because, and I'm not, you know, I'm just saying this has been mentioned to me on occasion, just out of interest, that wouldn't happen to be the tone that my wife uses, because she accuses me of not being able to hear her all the time. And he goes,
dude,
well, you know,
you're on
actually,
a radio show.
She can hear you now.
It's the wife zone is where I happen to be losing my hair. I'm just kidding. I went home and told her
that's
that immediately.
Awesome.
Oh, I had a good time with it. And she's like, that's not what it is. You're just ignoring me. I'm like, I would never ignore you, honey.
There's a difference between not listening and not paying attention.
A lot of people might have that problem, right? Losing hearing.
Grandpa, if you would get that car key out of your ear, you might be able to hear better. And some people will get that joke.
Oh, my gosh.
But anyway.
Hey, you know what goes with guns?
Hoses. Nice, Carl. Well done. Proud to announce, if anybody missed it this week on 97.1 FM Talk, we are the official radio partner of Guns and Hoses. We simulcast last year's broadcast. We'll be much more involved this year. Of course, it's always the night before Thanksgiving down at Enterprise Center.
I'm always there.
Carl Middleman is always in attendance. I've been going there for years now. It's become a tradition. This year, I'm going to be playing a bigger role. I don't know what it's going to be yet.
I've heard things.
Oh, no.
I think you will enjoy
it. I will not box. I cannot. I can't pick the gloves up anymore. We are proud to support them in any way we can, because such a great organization. I mean, I try to do as much as I can with my position here at the radio station to help first responders in general. Backstoppers has taken it to a whole new level, and Guns and Hoses every year, like this past week, presented him with another check for $1 million from their fundraiser. $1 million. It's fantastic, and just proud to be to play any role in that we can in the coming year. It's pretty awesome.
Well, and quite honestly, I've been involved with it over the years as well, even got a tuxedo one year. But, you know, we can minimize what we do to talk about Guns N' Roses and not taking anything away from the fighters, the people that put on the production, the television coverage of it, now the radio coverage of it with our station. You know what, though? You're just the megaphone. You're just spreading the word. We're talking about
just
like Chief
to.
Brown. He'd always get on here. Sell tickets. Sell tickets. And so there's something to bumping your gums. I mean, we get some credit for it.
You know, I was talking to one of the guys down there yesterday or the other day when I was at the news conference to present the check. And he's like, yeah, you know, when this whole thing started, it started in 87. He came on board in 93, I think he told me. And back then they used to hold the fights down at the old barn, the Checker Dome.
At the arena.
And he said there'd be 25 fights on the card. And there were usually more fights in the audience in the stands than there were. So the whole thing it's changed over the years because that doesn't happen anymore. And,
sure.
You know, they limited to probably 8 or 10 bouts and Channel 2.
And it's on television.
Channel 2 airs it. And, you know, our own Julie Tristan from KZK takes part in that.
Tom Ackerman does play-by-play.
Tom Ackerman helps out with it. I'm going to be involved this year, which I'm really excited about. Steve Hawley, just a great guy. He's the executive producer of the whole thing now of Guns N' Roses. So we're looking forward to whatever role we can play. And I'll mention while
you know,
I'll just mention real quick, Bo, while I'm on here. If you know a first responder that you'd like to see honored for what they do, like an individual, like a cop or a firefighter or somebody in EMS, we do that every month on my show. We go out and we deliver a box of food from Grillmaster Tony, grillmastertony.com, a great guy, delicious food, great brisket, anything he makes is top shelf. And we go deliver that to their offices, wherever they happen to be, whatever shift they're on, we'll go there for that first responder, and everybody in there gets to eat because somebody has recognized that individual. So just go to 971talk.com/contests, and you can find the form to fill out to nominate your favorite first responder.
And do you ever get to enjoy that food that's being delivered?
I do get invited to enjoy that because I usually deliver it personally. So I do get invited.
I've always wondered.
To do that.
I've always wondered.
Hey,
you know, if you need help, just
don't you worry, Bo. Everybody's heard about SAPA, the Second Amendment Preservation Act. Coming up, we're going to hear from both sides of that issue, the Missouri Firearms Association and also our coalition, I should say, and also a local police chief who's opposed to what this act does. He said it interferes with law enforcement. We'll get to all of that coming up on Second Amendment Radio and the Great Outdoors.
Second Amendment Radio and the Great Outdoors. This segment is brought to you by Razorback Armory. If you are wanting to suppress a firearm, or if you have a firearm you need gunsmithing done, head to RazorbackArmory.com to check out that site. But you can go to the store in De Pere on Manchester Road, just east of 270. Tell them Bo sent you to Razorback Armory. Now, today on Second Amendment Radio and the Great Outdoors, we are looking at the revised Missouri SAPA bill. Actually, both sides. That's what we do here. We talk about the hard stuff. First, Mark talks with Missouri Firearms Coalition, who are for the bill. And in the next break, we are going to talk to a police chief who is against it. Not the only one that I know, either. Here is Mark's interview from Tuesday with Jared Taylor.
All right, just a quick reminder here. Absentee voting for April in the general election, the general municipal election, starts today. Now, that is if you are going to, in St. Louis County, if you're going to request an absentee ballot, you can do that starting today to give yourself plenty of time. The in-person voting early doesn't start until, I believe, March 25th, if I'm reading this correct. So it'll be the end of next month before you can go in and vote early in person, but you can request an absentee ballot starting today through St. Louis County, where we got a big election coming up, and we're going to be telling you a lot more shortly about all of the school board candidates who are out there. There's a little Jedi mind trick going on with the NEA claiming in some districts they're not going to endorse this year. Nonsense. They're spending money on these candidates, and don't you buy it for a minute. They're trying to get their own slate of candidates in to these different school boards. And it's never been more important. I mean, there are great candidates running in Wentzville and the Francis Howe District and Rockwood. And we're going to be talking about all of those as we get closer to that election that's coming up in April. And they're also going to have some remote voting locations again in St. Louis County. I imagine some of the others might do that as well. But it, the ballot, the actual vote is April 8th, just to keep that in mind. So now you've got that information. Carl, hit it.
If you ban them in the future, the bullets will have been shot and there won't be any more available.
So you don't shoot deer with a bullet that size. If you do, you could cook it at the same time.
Put that double-barrel shotgun and fire two blasts outside the house.
That is without a doubt the dumbest thing I've ever heard.
All right, we talked a lot about the Second Amendment Preservation Act, and then, of course, a court stepped in and declared at least parts of it unconstitutional. There is an effort in the Missouri legislature this year to revive that, and we've got Jared Taylor with us this morning, former state representative working with the Missouri Firearms Coalition. Jared, welcome back.
Yeah, thanks for having me on.
Absolutely. Good to have you on this morning. Tell me what the what's different in this version of SAPA from the original.
Yeah, so we pared it back. We took what the Eighth Circuit said, and we made it, it does the exact same thing that the other former version of SAPA did. And we just said basically what the court said that we could do. So we took out kind of the flowery language and reinserted everything. Didn't call anything. So in the previous version of SAPA, we said that these were infringements. Like if the federal law did these things, like if it, you know, it took away the rights of citizens, the Second Amendment rights, we called them infringements. We didn't do that because the court said, "Well, you can't do that. We hold that ability to call those infringements or unconstitutional, but the legislature can't." So we took that language out, put it back in, just said, "Look, Missouri cops can't enforce federal gun laws." And that's all we said. That's exactly what the Eighth Circuit said we could do. And so that's what we did.
Interesting, because the word shall not be infringed is in the Constitution.
Yeah, yeah.
But you're not allowed to use it.
It's pretty funny. That's right. Yeah, the legislature can't say why we're doing something, according to the court. But we can do it. We just can't tell them why we're doing it.
So, you know, I have a number of friends in law enforcement, and a couple of them are the chiefs of their various departments. And once again, they're opposed to this. So why do you think that is? I mean, they've described it to me as before it was fear of being fined if they, somehow cooperated with federal authorities. I know that was part of their problem with the first version of it. On the second version of it, they brought up things like, well, if they arrest somebody and confiscate a weapon, running the serial number of that weapon in a federal database, they fear would also put them in some sort of violation of this.
You know, we heard that during the first time, and we made provisions in SAPA to allow them to use those databases. In fact, I mean, it's very clear. It's spelled out. Missouri law enforcement can use federal resources in order to enforce Missouri law. We're not relying on the feds. We don't want to take their money to be used by them in order to enforce federal law. But we absolutely can use federal resources to enforce Missouri law. It was a scare tactic, for lack of a better term, that they used the first time. And guess what? When it was in effect for 2 years, and that didn't play out. We had law enforcement across the state using federal partners, using those databases, using those search engines to enforce Missouri law, and we didn't see any lawsuits that were brought against any Missouri law enforcement.
Who would have brought those suits, just out of interest? Because I did hear that concern quite often. There was a fine associated with it. I think it was like $50,000. And if that had ever been levied, who would have been the one bringing that complaint?
It would have been the person that would have been charged with the crime.
Okay.
So a law-abiding citizen who violated federal law that Missouri law enforcement would have enforced.
So is that language in there again?
Well, there is the $50,000 penalty. Yeah.
Okay.
Of course, because we want to have a penalty mechanism. Because if we don't, then what's the purpose of the bill?
Right.
If we don't hold people accountable, there's no purpose of having the legislation.
So I also remember last time some of the concerns, and I'm thinking of this from memory, was that if a local officer is somehow assigned or loaned to a federal task force, they would no longer be able to do that. Is that right?
So again, that's one of their claims, but that's not accurate. And we had law enforcement across the state last time pull out of task forces, but then as a knee-jerk reaction, and then realize, okay, that's not really what it says, and they started going back into these task forces, like drug task forces, for instance. There's a carve-out specifically in SAPA that says if a person, a really bad guy, is selling drugs, is doing drugs, is a manufacturer of drugs, if they're committing an A or B felony drug crime, they can also be charged with a federal firearm crime, and it's not applicable. SAPA does not apply to that person.
Okay.
Because we want to put those bad guys away.
Yeah. Jared Taylor is our guest with the Missouri Firearms Coalition. So where does the bill stand now? Was it introduced in the House or the Senate? Has it had a committee hearing? Where does it stand?
Yep. So it's in both the House and the Senate. We've got mirror bills. Senator Rick Bratton over in the Senate has already had a hearing. Actually, it's already passed the Senate committee hearing. It's going to be on the floor, I would say, within the next couple weeks. And Representative Bill Hardwick has the bill over in the House. And it went through committee already, looking to have a floor or a committee vote probably this week. It'll move on to the Rules Committee probably next week.
Yeah. You know, I'm sure this is something you guys watch out for. I understood that Aaron Doerr was busy today with up on the Hill with some sort of a legislative hearing. But I had an interview earlier. I talked to John Lamping, and he's of the belief that a filibuster in the Senate over this issue with Roundup. It's easier than saying the chemical name. That there may be a filibuster in the Senate over this Roundup bill that could delay a lot of legislation between now and the end of the session.
Yeah, you know, I think that the Senate is watching that, and I think they're going to figure out a way past it like they do all the time. And, you know, I don't know what that looks like yet, but there's still a lot of time left, and I'm not concerned. I think we're going to get SAPA done this year. There are a lot of people that want it done. The House and the Senate, they all want to get it done. Missouri citizens want to get it done. And so I think it's going to happen this year.
Has the governor said if he'd sign it or not?
You know, he is very strong on Second Amendment, and I don't have any concern that he's not going to sign it.
All right. Well, we'll keep an eye on that then as this moves along. Jared Taylor, thank you for giving us some time this morning and explaining that.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Take care of yourself. Jared Taylor there with the Missouri Firearms Coalition.
And we'll hear from the other side of this argument coming up next.
Second Amendment Radio and the Great Outdoors. We have obviously talked at length about maybe a revised version of the Second Amendment Preservation Act coming through the Missouri legislature. There's a lot of pressure being put on these legislators to reenact some version of this after the Supreme Court threw big portions of it out, right? And, of course, there are a lot of people who are opposed to that idea, including a lot of my friends in law enforcement, many of whom happen to be in positions of authority, like Ellisville's police chief, Steve Lewis, kind enough to give us a few minutes this morning. Chief, how are you?
I'm very good, sir. Thanks for having me on, Mark.
Absolutely. You and I have discussed this. I've talked about it with Chief Mike Wiegand as well and his opposition. You guys were never in support of the original version of SAPA, and my guess is whatever they propose this time, in your opinion, is not any better. I'll let you take it from there.
No, sir. And the things I'd like to point out, and I want to state this unequivocally, typically, law enforcement is conservative. You have a lot of friends in law enforcement. You've been a great supporter of ours. And I think you wouldn't be our friends if you didn't know that we are a conservative group of people. Number two, and I think you know this better than anyone now, there is no bigger supporter or proponent of the Second Amendment. We believe in lawful citizens' right to keep and bear arms. Absolutely. Law enforcement across the country supports this. So then the question you need to ask is, well, if law enforcement supports the Second Amendment, why would they be against the Second Amendment Preservation Act as presented in the original bill and now this bill? And so that's really our issue. And our issue is we don't believe this truly supports citizens' rights to keep and bear arms legally and lawfully. And we believe it hurts law enforcement and our ability to take bad guys off the streets who are using guns illegally on a daily basis.
Well, Chief, this is Bo Matthews, and shout out to your son, you, Backwoods. Hope he's I'm doing good. Tell Backwoods I said hello.
When the
original SAPA bill came out, what they're trying to do is modify it. Is there an end game that there could be a SAPA agreement that would work for you, the SAPA law, or is it just too much?
No, actually. So let's talk about why they originally said they brought SAPA about, which I agree with. We don't want the federal government making laws, especially under the previous administration. We were all terrified they were going to make anti-gun laws to keep us from being able to exercise our Second Amendment right. So we are against any laws that would hurt our ability to keep and bear arms. The problem is this: that administration is no longer there, number one. Number two, and more importantly, parts of this bill hurt people's ability to do that. So what I would say is, if SAPA said any new law that hurts our ability to adhere to the Second Amendment, and any law enforcement officer who is working with a federal task force to stop the criminal element from having firearms and not punishing law enforcement for supporting these task forces, these violent crime task forces, which it's possible in the pursuant to our job, we go after someone who is a air quotes, law abiding citizen, but they're really a drug dealer who doesn't have a felon record, and we get them with drugs and guns. But one of my guys happens to seize that gun. He's now liable to be sued, to the tune of $50,000 with very little ability to defend himself. That's our issue with this. Our issue is why are you opening up these lawsuits to law enforcement for trying to protect our citizens? And that truly is our issue.
Well, let me
go ahead.
No, I'm sorry. Let me jump in there real quick, because people that listened to our interview with Jared Taylor there, I brought that up to him, and I'm like, what the officers are afraid they're going to be targeted by this. And his argument was, but nobody was. Like, the person who was affected by the arrest would be the one that could bring that action, and that never happened during the original SAPA. Why are you afraid that it would happen now? Do you want to address that?
I absolutely want to address it, because once again, it's disingenuous. During that time, there were several police departments across the state that received requests for all of their gun cases by attorneys, and they were gearing up to sue. What happened, and the reason they weren't sued, in my opinion, and most legal opinions, is because there was the stay, it went to court, and these attorneys were waiting to see, let's see what happens, right? You don't want to file all these lawsuits and then it gets thrown out and you've wasted all this time and energy.
Yeah.
I am telling you right now, if this goes through, we will have a ton of frivolous lawsuits. My question, Mark, I think you alluded to this. My question is this: why the emergency when we have the current administration who is not anti-gun by any account, right? Why would we have this emergency to push this bill through without sitting down with law enforcement as a whole and coming up with language that we can live with? And that's the issue. And I know they've said, there are law enforcement that supports this. I'm not speaking for every member of law enforcement across the state, but I'm speaking for most of them. I'm the vice president of Law Enforcement Legislative Coalition. I'm part of the Missouri Police Chiefs, and I'm part of the St. Louis Area Police Chiefs. We represent the overwhelming majority of police organizations in this state. We are against SAPA as written. If they want to come to us, if any of these elected officials want to sit down with us and say, hey, what can you guys live with that's fair? My biggest question is this, Mark, and nobody's going to accuse you of not being conservative and not being pro-Second Amendment, right?
Thank you.
If law enforcement is against this, Your question should be, why are they so wholesalely against this when they are absolutely a pro-gun, pro-conservative organization across the board, right? And to me, that, again, is disingenuous. We feel this is an opportunity for people to put in legislation that really is anti-police because it opens up a lot of lawsuits. And they say, well, it hasn't happened. I'm telling you, our insurance agencies tell us, because they insure against liability, they tell us, look, if SAPA goes in, we're going to tell you you cannot participate, whether it's the strictest interpretation of the law or not. That all has to be put through our courts. We don't know the answer until the courts make an answer. They've already struck it down once. Why are we in such a hurry to put new legislation in now when the courts have already said, as written, it doesn't work?
Well, I'd like to interject that the fact that the spirit of the original SAPA bill, whatever you want to call it, was because didn't civilians feel that there was a threat to their Second Amendment, and that's the spirit of it. I think that's what most civilians would believe, but they don't understand the repercussions of frivolous lawsuits and things like that. Chief Wiegand, I won't quote him exactly, but he said something about if you're in a car wreck and the car happens to have a firearm in it, they can't take the serial numbers from that firearm and submit it into the federal level for investigation. Is that correct?
Yeah, so one of my biggest, and I'm going to give you a different example because it's probably a little bit more relevant. You go down to a Cardinals game in the city of St. Louis. You bring your gun down there because you feel unsafe, right? But you can't bring it in with you, so you leave it in your car. We don't want you to do that, but let's be honest. That's what gun people do, right? We bring our guns down there. We leave them in our car secure. Well, we have these criminals that are going downtown shopping in your car by breaking your window and stealing your gun. So they steal your gun, right? You call the police. Under SAPA, you say to the policeman, hey, I have my serial number because I'm a responsible gun owner, and I want my dang gun back if you come across it. The officer says, I'm sorry, we can't put that into a database. Well, what happens is the bad guy goes just across the river to Illinois. Let's say Illinois State Police does a phenomenal job and they lock up this ring and they recover 30 guns, right? All stolen from one incident downtown St. Louis. You'll never get your gun back. And the reason you won't is because we can't put it into a system that would allow the return of that gun to its lawful owner. Now, they will say, well, that's not entirely true. No, that's absolutely true. It says it in the language, no national gun database. And by the way, and people don't realize this, there's not a database of gun ownership. When you buy a gun, and Mark can speak to this because I'm about to do a deal with this kid. You know, when you buy a gun, there's no required record in a national database that we run this number and we know the owner of this gun is this person. We don't want that, right? But the problem is when you're a lawful gun owner, and Bo, you get a gun stolen from you and it's an expensive gun, you want your gun back. Well, as officers, if another state, they stop the guy and they seize the gun, and we know that's not that guy's gun, but it's not in the computer stolen. Guess what? Not only do you not get your gun back, but this guy doesn't get charged with stealing of a firearm, a felony.
Okay.
Wow.
Lots of implications. I mean, that's why I wanted to have you on here, because here's the other side of this. It's politics. And and there's no way around this, and Republicans, conservatives are as guilty of it probably as the Democratic side, but sometimes we form a circular firing squad, if you'll excuse the phrase, and we kind of turn on each other, and you know, you're not as conservative as I am because you don't support this. And I don't know if this is happening. I suspect it probably is, but there's probably pressure on people to say, hey, if you don't support this, we're going to put you on a list of people that are against the Second Amendment, whether that's true or not, because in most cases, it's probably not. But politically, it could be damaging, I imagine. Right, Chief?
Sir, you, and once again, and I get tired of saying this, you're absolutely correct, Mark. The fear.
I get tired of that, too.
I don't get tired of hearing it, but go ahead.
The fear in our legislature from the people I've spoken to is, look, we can't get painted in the state of Missouri as the anti-gun. I joke, I teach a lot of classes, and I joke with people who come in from other states. I say, look, Missouri loves our guns. We hand you a gun when you cross our border. That's how much we love our guns. I'm all, that's all wonderful. But if you can't have the conversation, and if you're afraid as a legislature that if you vote no on this, you're going to be painted as anti-gun. And by the way, this group that's behind this has told people, we will put money and we will tell people you're anti-gun because you're anti-Second Amendment. I want this to be as clear as possible, and I think I've made it that way. We are pro-Second Amendment. We are also pro the safety of our citizens and the rights of our citizens to own guns and recover their guns when they're stolen. We are, you know, the other thing we haven't hit on, Mark, and I don't want to, you know, I know you only have so much time, and you know me, I'll talk forever, but it also impacts who we can hire, because in this statute, we can't hire people who had previously been involved with the seizure of a gun at a federal level. That means military police, right? If you're a military policeman and you made a federal gun arrest, which is very possible, we can't hire you to work for our agency. Our officers are liable if they're with a task force unintentionally. Let's say it's a federal task force looking for illegals in our country who you know, we need to violent illegal immigrants in our country. They come across a gun, that there's no gun crime per se, but they happen to be looking for them, and they come across this gun, and they're part of that, and they go in the report. Based on this statute, they're liable for that. Our insurance people are telling us, you can't take that risk because it's $50,000 a lawsuit. And love it or hate it, frivolous lawsuits, let's say you get a bunch of bad guys that get together and say, we're just going to sue you the heck out of your agency. What do cities do? They settle. So now we're going to settle $20,000 here, $30,000 there, because it's going to cost us more than that to defend it, right? And the potential loss on top of it. You're opening, it's, in my opinion, it's bad law. And by the way, we as an organization, the Law Enforcement Legislative Coalition, Missouri Police Chiefs, we are willing to sit down with someone and say, hey, let's put some common sense to this. We don't want more restrictive gun. We've got plenty of gun laws on the books, all right? We can hold felons accountable when they use firearms in a bad way. We don't need new legislation to do that. Work with us so that we can protect our Second Amendment rights and still protect our officers and their ability to do their jobs.
I think the language is as confusing as Amendment 3 that happened earlier last year. It's just, you know, it's the, and so we're looking, you know, this show, Second Amendment Radio and the Great Outdoors, is, you know, listened mostly by civilians. And so that's why we wanted you to be on, Chief Steve Lewis of the Ellisville PD. What do the civilians do, or what can we do as individuals? Do we contact somebody? How do we do anything? Or do we just let the professionals fight it out?
No, sir. Bo, actually, I think you're spot on. You are the strength. Okay. You can contact your representatives and let them know, look, we support law enforcement. As a whole in this state, we have a tremendous amount of support for our law enforcement. We have to get the message out to our citizens, our civilians, that this is bad legislation for law enforcement and for the safety of our citizenry. Let them know, look, if you vote no on SAPA, we understand it doesn't mean you're against Second Amendment rights. And in fact, encourage them to work with law enforcement to come up with similar legislation. I talked to one attorney, and it sounded to me like it could all be fixed by putting in the one statement, no new legislation. There's no current legislation that impacts this right now. There's nothing on the books right now that takes away our gun rights. So if you just put in the simple language, could not enforce new legislation, I think that would fix it. So then my question to you would be, why doesn't this group want to just do that? Why, if there's not an onus on them, if there's not something that they want to be able to sue law enforcement, and I don't know these people at all. I've listened to them on Mark's show. I think some of the things they say, I think, aren't entirely accurate, but maybe they are from their perspective. But I will say this. You've got a group of law enforcement that's pro-Second Amendment, that are conservative, and that are saying, we want to talk about how we can make this bill a pill that we can swallow. Yet we've never had that conversation. We've never had, you know, they've drawn a line and said, well, it's got to have this, it's got to have that. To me, that's a little disingenuous. And for our citizens, I want them to contact our representatives and say, look, in this case, we know you're not attacking the Second Amendment. We know you support the Second Amendment. But we also listen to our law enforcement leaders who believe this is bad law for law enforcement.
Well, Chief Lewis, we appreciate you giving us as much time as you have this morning to talk about this. It's important that people understand what's at stake here, my friend. Thank you.
thank you guys so much for your honest and fair coverage, and I appreciate you guys as always. Bo and Mark, you guys are great. Thank you.
You bet. We'll talk to you soon.
Take care, sir.
Yep.
Bye.
Thank you, Chief Steve Lewis there from Ellisville, obviously voicing the frustration of a lot of members of law enforcement who have some concerns over how this thing's worded, Bo.
It's the language that was built by attorneys, probably, and this could actually turn out to be an entire industry for attorneys to be suing law enforcement across the state of Missouri.
Well,
and we don't need any more of that. Like he mentioned, frivolous lawsuits.
It sounds like there could be a compromise, but I don't know if they'll get around to reaching that or not. We'll see. At least you've got the information now, for sure. All right, that's going to do it for this edition of Second Amendment Radio in the Great Outdoors.
All right, have a great rest of your weekend. See you, boys.
Get more at 971talk.com.